Chittadanya Karatayam Panay Apuraya Ratnay Palamban Namapurisha Palapikai Nitasya Ayam Ladies, Palak Vikrayani Tasya Chittatanya Karatayam Vadai Apuraya Ratnaya Palabhanam Apuricha Vikrayani Tasya Falavikayani, the Aborigine fruit vendor who was an elderly woman. Tasya of Krishna. Chittatanya, the paddy he brought to barter having mostly fallen. Karatayam, palms of the hands. Phalai Apuraya, the fruit vendor, filled his small palms with fruits. Ratnai, in exchange for jewels and gold. Phalabandham, basket of fruit. Apuri cha, filled. Translation. While Krishna was going to the fruit vendor very hastily, most of the grains he was holding fell. Nonetheless, the fruit vendor filled Krishna's hands with fruits, and her fruit basket was immediately filled with jewels and gold. Purport, Bhagavad Gita 9:26, Krishna says, Patram pushpam phalam toyam yome bhakya pyachati taraham bhakya paritam asnami prayatatmana. Krishna is so kind that if anyone offers him a leaf, a fruit, a flower, or some water, he will immediately accept it. The only condition is that these things should be offered with bhakti, yome bhaktiya priyachati. Otherwise, if one is puffed up with false prestige, thinking, I have so much opulence and I'm giving something to Krishna, one's offering will not be accepted by Krishna. The fruit vendor, although a woman belonging to the poor Aborigine class, dealt with Krishna with great affection, saying, Krishna, you have come to me to take some fruit in exchange for grains. All the grains have fallen, but still, you may take whatever you like. All the grains have fallen. Thus she filled Krishna's palms with whatever fruits he could carry. In exchange, Krishna filled her whole basket with jewels and gold. From this incident, one should learn that for anything offered to Krishna with love and affection, Krishna can reciprocate many millions of times over, both materially and spiritually. The basic principle involved is an exchange of love. Therefore, Krishna teaches in Bhagavad Gita 9:27, Yakaroshi arashnashi yajuhasi dadasi yatapashasi konteyata kurishamarapanam. O son of Kunti, all that you do, all that you eat, all that you offer and give away, as well as all austerities that you may perform, should be done as an offering unto me. With love and affection, one should try to give something to Krishna from one's source of income. Then one's life will be successful. Krishna is full in all opulences. He does not need anything from anyone. But if one is prepared to give something to Krishna, That is for one's own benefit. The example given in this connection is that when one's real face is decorated, the reflection of one's face is automatically decorated. Similarly, if we try to serve Krishna with all our opulences, we, as parts and parcels, are reflections of Krishna, will become happy in exchange. Krishna is always happy, for he's Atmarama, fully satisfied with his own opulence. Mukam karoti vachalam bangam langhayate girim yakiptam tamaham vande shi gurum dinatarinam om agyana timirandasya gyananjana shalakaya chakshumiritam yena tasmai shi gurave namaha. Krishna is not hungry. Krishna, of course, if you tell Mother Yashoda that, she won't agree. But Krishna is also not poor. In Brahma Samhita, Lakshmi Sahasya Shatasam Brahma Sevyamanam, millions of Lakshmis are serving him. He doesn't need our opulences. He doesn't need our food. He's not impressed with our renunciation also, if we give something to him. Srila Prabhupada gave the example, if you should walk into the Bank of America and say, I renounce this bank, then people will simply laugh at you because it's not yours to renounce. So if you say, okay, I'm renouncing this for Krishna, then people will also laugh because everything is Krishna's. Or you can walk into the bank and say, offer this bank to Krishna. It's not yours to offer. Of course, in the old days, the Sankirtan devotees used to go into the supermarket and say, I offer this supermarket to Krishna. And then they figured they could eat whatever they liked from the supermarket. That was in the old days. I don't think that's done anymore. But anyway, that was something we used to do. What actually do we have except something that belongs to Krishna? Krishna is not looking so much at what we give him. Of course, if it's with love and affection, he looks. But he's also looking what we're holding back, and that is our love and affection. Krishna, he has unlimited desires, and therefore he also wants us to join him. We sometimes might wonder, well, you know, I'm nobody. Why should Krishna want me to go back to Godhead? But actually, the point is he wants to increase his enjoyment. His enjoyment's always increasing. So therefore, he also wants everyone here in the material world to go and enjoy with him in the spiritual world. So the devotee who helps Krishna to enjoy like this, he's the most dear to him. The devotees, they offer everything to Krishna, and Krishna gives everything a million times back. As Prabhupada used to say, what can you accept with your two hands if Krishna wants to give you with your 10 hands? And Srila Prabhupada, whenever he would see like a water tap was on, he would turn it off. If he would see some lights or fans on, he would turn them off. And in the same way, Because you're wasting Krishna's energy. So in the same way, if he would see some people wasting their lives, wasting their energy, he would want to engage them and offer them to Krishna, engage them in Krishna's service. He would want to turn off their material life and let them become spiritual beings, get back into the spiritual life. So the pure devotee understands that everything belongs to Krishna. Not only Krishna, everything belongs to Krishna, everything belongs to Krishna's devotees. Everything belongs to the brahmanas. Prithu Maharaj, he understood this principle. And after hearing from the four kumaras and doing sacrifice, he wanted to offer something to the four kumaras. And he said, you know, it's my duty to offer you something. But all I possess are the remnants of food taken by great saintly persons. So what shall I give you? He wanted to give something. So out of love, the devotee, he gives whatever he has to Krishna. Sudama Brahman is another example. He went begging to get some broken chipped rice, and he offered that to Krishna. And Rukmini had to stop him, saying, no, please, don't eat any more. Otherwise, I'm obliged to stay with him, this poor Brahman. So in Bhagavatam, the 10th canto, 22nd chapter, Krishna talks about offering. He says, every living entity should serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead by prana, life, artha, wealth, intelligence, dhya, and words, vacha. That is, etavad jamasa phalyam dehinamiha dehishu pranarata dhya vacha shaya acharanam sada. So Prabhupada explained this verse. You should give your life, you should give your pranayar. But if you can't give your life, then give artha, give your money. And if you think, oh, I don't have money, then give dhya, give your intelligence. And if you think, oh, I don't have any intelligence, then give vacha, give your words. Speak about Krishna, tell somebody about Krishna, chant Hare Krishna. That's the least you can do. So Srila Prabhupada engaged all of us, both. Some of us had nothing when we joined, like myself and my husband, we were hippies, so we had nothing much to give except our lives, which is, of course, the best thing. And some of us were rich and had a lot to give. So I remember when I joined in Boston in 1970, the temple was pretty much poverty-stricken, and very hard to pay the rent. So I did have one possession, and that was my cello, which because I was a musician before, and it was a good one. So I remember one month he asked me to sell it. I said, okay, and I sold the cello to pay the rent for the temple. And then the next month, he said, I'm sending you to Florida, you know, from Boston to Florida. So how he sent us, you know, I had visions, train, bus, no, on the road, hitchhiking with all our boxes of stuff in our yellow sheets. So that was spiritual life. We give everything to Krishna, and then we depend on Krishna. After we give everything to Krishna, and Krishna has to provide. And interestingly enough, even though we looked kind of strange in those days in yellow sheets, and we didn't have suitcases, we had a couple of boxes with our stuff in it, somebody picked us up and took us to New York. And then from New York, they were a bit merciful and let us collect for a bus ticket to Florida. So anyway, Krishna provides. You give something to him, and don't worry, don't think you'll be the loser. All you lose is your anxiety and some of these other things. So Jayananda, on the other hand, he gave a lot of money to Prabhupada. He gave his savings to print Nectar of Devotion. Brahmananda gave his life savings when he joined. And then he met Prabhupada, and he was giving over his $5,000 check, and he was looking at the Srimad Bhagavatams, thinking, okay, maybe I can get these in exchange for my life savings. And he asked, can I have the Srimad Bhagavatams? And Prabhupada said, yes, but that will be extra. So Brahmananda said that actually collecting that $16 was harder than the $5,000 he had got before. Because at that point he was a brahmachari when he had to collect. So this was Srila Prabhupada. There is another devotee of my godbrother, Matsya Avatar, who also was, he met Prabhupada in Vrindavan, and Prabhupada preached to him, and he asked Matsya, what do you think? And he says, I completely agree. Prabhupada said, so what is the problem? You know, Prabhupada would always make us take the next step. Okay, you agree then, surrender. So then Matsya said, well, you know, here with you, with the devotees, there's no problem, but you know, I have to go back to Italy. I have to get married. I have 6 businesses to manage. So this is a problem. So Prabhupada said, don't fear. Just become a devotee. Chant Hare Krishna. Read Bhagavad Gita as it is. And Krishna will reveal himself. In the Gita, you'll find the solution to any material problem. So there is no time to waste. So Prabhupada encouraged him also to use his wealth and position in Krishna's service. And he explained, Krishna, he quoted this verse from Bhagavatam, pranayartartyavacha, that anything can be used in Krishna's service. And he asked, he says, we are using money, and he asked Gopal Krishna Maharaj, how much are we spending every month here? And Prabhupada gave him the figure. And Prabhupada said, you can also spend for Krishna, and you're a very talented man, and you have so many abilities, but do you know where your abilities, where your talents are coming from? And he said, every talent belongs to God, so you must offer it back to him, your work, your talents, your skills, and the fruits of your work. So don't worry, Krishna will protect you, do not fear. So Matsya Avatar, he was Marco in those days, he was very satisfied, and it was clear. And the last question, another devotee asked Sajanashraya, Prabhupada, what is the most pleasing thing I can do for you? And Prabhupada said, just become a pure devotee. Prabhupada wanted, that's why he He gave all these books. Prabhupada had a way of making us give things to Krishna. There was one man in Delhi. He came to see Prabhupada and he said, you know, I have all these factories, one here, one there, one in Jaipur, one in Delhi, but I have so much anxiety, I cannot sleep. Prabhupada said, oh, well, give us your factories. We will remove your anxiety. We will solve your problem. And he said, no, no, Swamiji, it's okay. Prabhupada said, no, no, we will help you. We will cure your anxiety. Give us your factories. So Prabhupada was very funny. But anyway, the principle is that we want to offer something to Krishna. We offer bhoga, and he gives us back the shadam. We offer gifts, and he gives us back gifts. And we're also, the six exchanges, the dati patagriyanati guyamakyati prichati, bhunte bhojate chaiva savidham priti lakshanam, that offering all these things, offering food, and also accepting food, offering gifts, accepting gifts, and revealing your mind confidentially, inquiring confidentially, and also getting answers. These are the six loving exchanges, and we're also meant to have them with Krishna, Prabhupada said in one lecture in 1966. Back way back then, he said, we must have these. We have to make friendship with Krishna. Just like if you're going to meet a very important man, you bring a gift to give him. So Krishna is the most important man, most important person. So when we go to meet him, we should bring something, make a connection, introduce ourselves in a loving manner. So a nectar of instruction, these six exchanges are described. And in this way, we can begin to love Krishna. In another lecture on the prayers of Queen Kunti, Srila Prabhupada said, you must practice how to love Krishna. First, get up early in the morning. You don't like to, but you think, I'll get up early to satisfy Krishna. This is Prabhupada said. This is the beginning. Then, I have to chant 16 rounds of Hare Krishna on my beads. Prabhupada said, you may be lazy. You may not want to do it. But if you want to love Krishna, you must do it. And so that's how you love Krishna. In the beginning, you have to learn how to love Krishna. But when you come to the stage of love of God, there's no question of, I have to do this. I must do. I should do. You'll start thinking, I can't wait to get my hand in my bead bag. Tomorrow morning, not I can't wait to get it out of the bead bag and do something else. When is it going to finish? No, we will be naturally attracted. Of course, we were talking about that in our seminar, and that is the level of ruchi, taste. Prabhupada said, just like if you love somebody, if you love a girl, you'll give her six exchanges of love. You'll give her some flowers. You'll give her some food to eat. You'll reveal your mind. So the same thing with Krishna. That we must do these. And actually, in the beginning days in Boston, we used to do that. We didn't have anything to give, but we did go in every once a week. We all had to line up, 65 of us, and go in front of the deities and report, this is what I did this week for you, and ask for blessings. Every week, I remember, as a new bhakti, we had to do that. And then we'd offer prayers, and we would get answers also sometimes. So Krishna reciprocates with our offerings. Krishna reciprocates with our prayers. And it doesn't matter how rich or poor. Here we have a poor aborigine. In Chaitanya Bhagavat, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was the same. Sridhar was a very poor banana leaf seller. And he would force Sridhar every day. He would argue with him and tell him, you have to give him to me free. I'm not going to give you anything for that. And he would go and drink from his old, rusty, iron drinking pot. He would take his water, and that water was like nectar because of the love of Sridhar, Kalavicha Sridhar. So if a devotee has little in ordinary food, he'll prefer that to the opulent offerings, just like when Krishna went to Hastinapur as a peace messenger to Duryodhana. Duryodhana offered him a feast, and Krishna refused it because there is no love. He says, anyone who doesn't like the Pandavas, he's also my enemy. If someone is enemy of the Pandavas, he's enemy of me. So then he went to Vidura's house, and Vidura gave a simple offering. It was Vidura. Some people say it was Vidura who was unpeeling the banana and offering the peels. Some people say it was Yudhisthira who was doing that. But anyway, it was a simple offering. But Krishna accepted. He preferred that to the opulent feast, because Krishna is hungry for our love. He is hungry in one sense, but not for our food. So Sanatana Goswami, another example, he was hanging his deities in the tree, offering some stale japatis, or some people in Braj, they say he was like he wasn't even rolling them out. It was like a ball, and he would throw it in the fire, and then he would take it out. And sometimes they do that in Braj too, you know, they throw it in the fire and just take it out, cut in the fire. So he was doing that, and his deities were complaining, you know, how, you're giving us these stale japatis. How can we eat this? And Sanatan was saying, I'm an old man. Where can I go? What can I get for you? I'm doing my best. And the deity was also complaining, at least you could give me some salt to go with it. And then, of course, the story goes, this big boat of salt came and got stuck just nearby, and Sanatana Goswami helped the captain of the boat get out, and that person built the temple of Madan Mohan. So Prabhupada made the point, he was talking about this story, and he said, what is our value, and what is the value of our things? It's nothing. But if we offer them to Krishna, then we can be happy. And this story reminds me also, when I was reading this, I think part of this purport, that was the one before, it's this one. From this incident, one should learn that for anything offered to Krishna with love and affection, Krishna can reciprocate millions of times over, both materially and spiritually. So this reminded me of a verse from Uddhava Gita in the 11th canto. And at the end of the Uddhava Gita, this Uddhava Gita spoken by Krishna to Uddhava, the whole Uddhava Gita, Krishna's separating material from spiritual, eternal from temporary. He's explaining the difference. But then at the end, he says, you know, the most wonderful thing, my devotees are the most intelligent, because they take the temporary, they take the material, and they exchange it for the eternal, for the permanent. And then one commentator says in the purport, I don't, maybe Vishnath, he says, so how is the devotee intelligent? Because he takes this body, which is not worth anything, not worth a penny, he says, not worth a cent, and he gives it in exchange for Krishna. And Krishna gives himself with all his opulence to the devotee in exchange for this body. And he explains how to give the body, and that's by chanting, using the ears to hear, by using the tongue to chant, using all our senses, giving them to Krishna, sacrifice for Krishna. And that way we exchange this body, diseased and old and useless, for Krishna. So isn't that good? It's a bargain. Just like before they had cash for clunkers. I think I mentioned this in a class. Cash for clunkers here in America. And that's, Akuti got her car with that program, cash for clunkers. You have a clunker car, and then you trade it in, the government gives you $5,000 for your new car. But now they don't do that anymore. But we trade in this body, and we get clunker, and we get Krishna. And so this is a really good deal. And we should all take advantage of this opportunity of devotional service. And Krishna is not partial. He loved this aborigine, old aborigine woman. Now who is going to love an old aborigine woman except Krishna? Or maybe her family. But anyway, he loved her because she was so affectionate. And Prabhupada, one lecture, he talked about that picture of Krishna embracing the cow. He's like sitting on a rock and there's a cow. And so Prabhupada said, Krishna's not partial. He's embracing the gopis, he's embracing the calf and the cows. He's embracing the calf. And he's equal to everyone. So if you want to serve Krishna, then he will accept you. He will accept your service if somebody wants to serve. If you want to be his mother, you want to be his friend, his lover, whatever. Krishna is not partial. So that is hope for us, that we can, like this aborigine, we may be poor in qualities or whatever, but Krishna does not discriminate. and especially Gonitai, they don't see what qualities we have. They freely give us love of God. Krishna accepts us. So Prabhupada in one lecture explained that when we chant the holy name, we should think, we should cry like a child crying for its mother, and we should pray, please accept me. Please accept me. And that's the essence of the Shikshastika verse 5. Ai nandatunuja kinkaram patitamam vishame bhavambuddha kripaya tavaparapankajastita tali shalishami chintaya. I've fallen. I'm your servant, but I've fallen in this ocean. Please pick me up and place me as an atom of dust at your lotus feet. So please accept me. And a very interesting thing Prabhupada said in another lecture was that when we chant attentively, Krishna comes and he says, please accept me. Please accept me. So hopefully some of us have had that experience. But unfortunately, a lot of us, when Krishna may come, our line is busy, as they say. Our mind is somewhere else, and we don't pick up that Krishna is here waiting for us to accept him. So, this is... In that same lecture, Prabhupada said, we wake up in the morning, we think, I have so many problems today to solve. He said, we only have one problem. And what is that one problem? How to accept Krishna. That's our problem. That's our main problem. How to accept Krishna. He's coming in so many ways. So here in this purport at the end, Prabhupada also talks about, if you worship Krishna, when one's real face is decorated, the reflection of one's face is automatically decorated. Similarly, if we try to serve Krishna with all our opulences, we, as parts and parcels or reflections of Krishna, will become happy in exchange. Krishna is always happy, for he is Atmarama, fully satisfied with his own opulence. So Prabhupada here gives another thing. If we give our opulences to Krishna, we'll be happy like him. He's happy, so that's another exchange. You give to Krishna and you'll be happy. And that's a very rare thing in this world, to be happy. Nobody's happy in this world. Everybody has something, some problem. But if we give to Krishna, we'll be happy. And this is yoga. This is yoga. Yoga means to connect, to unite with Krishna. So there's a verse in Bhagavatam which Prabhupada paraphrased here in this purport. It's from 7th canto, 9th chapter, verse 11, Prahlad Maharaj prayers. And I'll sing that for you. Naivatmana papurayam nijala papurno manam janat avidisha karuno vrinite yayajano bhagavate vidatita manam tachakmane patimukhasi atamakashri. Supreme Lord, Supreme Personality of Godhead, is always fully satisfied in himself. Therefore, when something is offered to him, the offering, by the Lord's mercy, is for the benefit of the devotee. For the Lord does not need service from anyone. To give an example, if one's face is decorated, the reflection of one's face in a mirror is also seen to be decorated. Now, Prabhupada said to one of our godbrothers, Nischintya, you must decorate the deities very nicely. So we see that's happening here every day. By decorating the deities, you are decorating your heart. Isn't that nice? So all you pujaris there, when you dress the deities, you're decorating your heart. If you neglect decorating the deities, you will neglect decorating your heart. Then your heart will become black, and that is why so many have left. Interesting comment. So make sure you decorate the deities. And if you don't personally do it, get some flowers and help the pujari do it. Give something to help decorate the deities. Now, we have quoted here, Patram Pushpam Phalam Toyam, Yome Bhakta Prayachati. In the purport, Prabhupada says, this process is so easy. Even a leaf or a little water, a fruit, can be offered to the Lord in genuine love, and the Lord will be pleased to accept it. No one, therefore, can be barred from Krishna consciousness because it is so easy and universal. Now, here's Prabhupada. Who is such a fool? He does not want to be Krishna conscious by this simple method, and thus attain the highest perfectional life of eternity, bliss, and knowledge. So we don't want to be a fool. We want to accept this. Such a good bargain, you know. Krishna wants only loving service and nothing more. So we should offer out of appreciation for Krishna. We should appreciate, Krishna has given me this life. Let me give it to him. Krishna has given me this food, let me give it to him. Krishna has given me this maintenance, let me help him. And these are all your things, Krishna. So everything, we offer everything and we take as prasadam. The devotee only wants prasadam. He wants to eat food prasadam, he wants to eat, to have everything as prasadam. In India, they offer everything. They come with saris and bangles and everything they offer to the deities first. Of course, then they take them back. But the principle is that they want prasadam. They want to enjoy. They offer their neck beads. They offer everything, bell, ankle bells, whatever. Because they want to have the deity's prasadam. And they feel, and this is very auspicious. So we say, yes, first you taste it, and then I will enjoy. So this is Krishna consciousness. I guess I could stop here, or I could go a little bit further. Because I only talked about one thing, and that's offering. And the second thing was the beauty of Krishna, and how this lady was attracted by beauty out of affection. She saw a beautiful Krishna, she was attracted, and she filled his hands. So Prabhupada made a comment that how everyone in Vrindavan is attracted by Krishna. And if we simply learn how to love Krishna, we can make this world as Vrindavan. And then just one more point is about the deities again. Kapiladev, he says, "Oh, my mother, my devotees always see the smiling face of my form with eyes like the rising morning sun." 3, 25, 35, and 36. "They like to see my various transcendental forms, which are all benevolent, and they also talk favorably with me." And here's 36. "Upon seeing the charming forms of the Lord, smiling and attractive, and hearing his very pleasing words, pure devotee almost loses all other consciousness. His senses are freed from all other engagements, and he becomes absorbed in devotional service. Thus, in spite of his unwillingness, he attains liberation without separate endeavor." So, a very interesting purport. Prabhupada says there's three divisions of devotees, first class, second class, third class. He said even the third class devotees are liberated souls. He said all they have to do is come, look at the deities, and appreciate them. And they're imperceptibly liberated, even against their will, because a lot of third-class devotees don't want to be liberated. They just want to, you know, do something and also, you know, have this world and, you know, be here and be happy like that. They don't especially want to change their situation. So even they get liberation if they just appreciate the beauty of the deities and the decoration. So this is wonderful. So I'll stop here. Any questions or comments? Yes, Rangavati.
Thank you, Narayani. That was very touching, every word. It appears in the material world that people are happy.
It appears people are happy.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It appears that they are. And when we hear over and over again that people cannot be happy, there's so much misery.
Right.
It seems a little difficult to believe sometimes as if you're looking at that as a reason to become Krishna conscious. So I'd just like to hear you say a few words about that.
Yeah, one of the countries I was in, one in Scandinavia, one of those countries in Scandinavia, they told me that, yes, people are happy here. One third of the people are taking happy pills. Very happy people. So the happy pill is, you know, because you're depressed. And so you want to be happy. And, another interesting thing was, I read it somewhere that the happiest people in the world are from Bangladesh, and they're the poorest country in the world. So maybe there is happiness, but it's not where we think it is. And also, yes, so happiness, there's different kinds of happiness. There's, you know, there's something, I mean, of course, sometimes we want something, we want happiness, we want to get something, and then we don't get it, then we get upset. And sometimes we want something, we get it, but then it doesn't live up to our expectations. And then we want something, we get it, it's really good, but then we lose it. So there's a lot of different kinds of happiness in this world. And There was one person we met on Sankirtan book distribution in Ireland, and he said, "Today is the happiest day of my life. The happiest day of my life was when I bought this big, huge boat, because in Ireland there's all these rivers and islands, and there's big, huge, the boats cost as much as the houses. He said, I bought this boat, and that was the happiest day of my life. He said, but then, you know what? I sold the boat, and that was the happiest day of my life." This was a non-devotee. So he realized, you know, you have to maintain it, you have to do so many things. So happiness is there, but it's always mixed. We don't want mixed happiness. We want, even if you feel like you're happy, you still have to die, you know. You can't. So how can you be happy if you know you're going to die? I mean, most people don't think about it. But, you know, okay, suppose your house is on fire and you think, okay, well, better if I'm going to do interior decoration. And I'm going to buy a TV and I'm going to buy all these things. And so I'm going to make my house really nice. Meantime, it's on fire. Now, people don't realize their houses are on fire. And that's this body especially. It's on fire. It's chanda veg. And old age comes and people are not happy in their old age, although they try. And that's why they have all these things to make you take your wrinkles off and whatever. Remember when I put my proper age on Facebook, and I used to get all these advertisements for wrinkles and face creams. So then I took off the year. And then I got other things. It's very funny. But anyway, yeah, you see all these people, I guess, in Florida or wherever they are, and they just can't do it any. They try to enjoy, but they don't. Another was very interesting. I was preaching in Moscow, and one of the ladies in the ladies' ashram said, you know, it looks to me like we're suffering and these people outside are enjoying much more. And I said, okay. I said, so do you want to, why don't we go and visit an old age home and see how much they're, see what the result is of all their working hard the whole life. I went. I visited my mother-in-law. And they drug you up so much that you're out of your mind and you can't give them any trouble. And then they're preparing for next life. They're all wearing diapers. And they're all playing kids' games. They sit in the circle with their wheelchairs and they're hitting balloons to each other. So it's like, this is the result of your hard work the whole life. It's not worth it. And they work the whole life, and then the recession comes, and you lose your house if you don't make a payment or something. My brother lost his house. My father lost his house already. And I read somewhere, just every 7 seconds, somebody loses their house in America. I don't know if it's true. But, yeah, so they may be happy, but it's not a permanent happiness. It's not a secure happiness. It's not secure. It's insecure. It can be taken away at any moment. So, therefore, better we try for the eternal happiness, and that is something you cannot get from any. It doesn't compare to any happiness of this world. Yes, Prabhuji.
In Bhagavad Gita, chapter 18.
Chapter 18.
And also the 17 that follows 17. The three types of faith, and then
right.
Goes to three types of knowledge, three types of happiness.
Three types of happiness.
So these three types of, you have explained very nicely, I appreciate, that happiness through lamentation caused by the tamogun, happiness for future or aspiration by thinking something coming. Anticipation makes them very happy, like you said, the boat. These are rajogun producing. Then happiness by seeing the clarity, which is like, say, I realize myself, I am a hand. So I am happy. But that will not happy until the hand serves the stomach.
Right.
So Prabhupada gave a very practical that our happiness is forever eternal, which is very difficult for Karmi Jnani to understand.
Right.
But this is a vast difference. And it's purport after purport Prabhupada explains in 18th chapter. Very
yes.
Sweet.
Yeah. Okay, yes, Prabhu. Thank you for that question. Makes you think.
You said it's stated that the happiest people in the world are the Bangladesh.
Somebody did a survey.
I used
survey.
To think these people are so fortunate because the Ganges, the whole
Ganga is there.
That land. how these sinful people could actually get that land. Yeah. You know, I used to think like that.
Yeah.
You know, and now you brought the point up there.
That's why, so that could be the reason why they're happy.
Well,
they have the Ganga.
The Ganges, yeah.
And they live simply.
Yeah. My comment is this, this story here, because the world is actually plagued with materialistic people,
right.
This story is really important for us to actually preach.
Oh, yeah, often, yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Because, mm-hmm. you know, materialist people, they want to know how they could get wealth. And
Yeah, this Dhruva Maharaj and this story, yeah, you tell them you worship Krishna and everything will become very nice. Unless you become a pure devotee and he takes everything away. Yeah, no, Ramya. Ramya? And then Jitari.
I was wondering if you have any further information why this specific fruit vendor went to Krishna and why Krishna...
Why did she go to Krishna?
Yeah.
Well, Prabhupada mentions that they had their fruits to sell and they used to go to the village to sell. There's a little bit more information. Is they would go to the villages, sell their fruits, and they would get information about Krishna, and then they'd go to Mathura and sell their fruits and tell the ladies, oh, Krishna did this and Krishna did that. So the ladies of Mathura would get the news from the fruit vendors. They used to go back and forth, and the wives of the Brahmins also, they would go and sell fruit to the wives of the Brahmins, and the wives of the Brahmins would ask, oh, you have any news about Krishna? So they were kind of like they were far out, these Aborigine ladies. Because they were free. They were free to move everywhere. They were free. They didn't have, the gopis didn't have that freedom. The Brahmana's wives, the material, none of them had the freedom of the Aborigine ladies. And they could just do things. So they could just go and meet Krishna, and you know, like that. And the other ones, this is the elderly one, the young ones too. They were in the jungle. And so they also would had ecstatic love for Krishna. And Krishna loved them. Yes, Jitari.
During the Vyasa Puja, I was writing an offering and I came across this verse that surprised me. I mean, I've read it many times, but I was just thinking in the offering for Srila Prabhupada that one of the things that we can do as devotees is we can exhibit the qualities that Srila Prabhupada exhibited. So then I was, and in that way people will see Srila Prabhupada,
right.
You know, whether we're with devotees or with just regular people, you know, this person's different, you know.
Right.
So as I was reading through the qualities of the devotees, it shocked me. I never really read it in that way, but it said one of the qualities of the devotee is the perception of the evil of birth, death, disease, and old age. Mm. And I, you know, I never really thought of birth as being, evil. And I was just wondering, is that, you know, I mean, is there a Sanskrit, I mean, how is that word?
Well, we'd have to look it up. From which verse were you reading?
It's in the Bhagavad Gita.
Oh, so that 13. Sounds like... 13th chapter, 13th chapter, verses 8 to 12.
Yeah.
Process of knowledge.
Yeah.
You know it? Vyadhi dukkha dosha anudarshanam. Yeah, it's the faults, dosha.
The faults, not necessarily evil, but the faults.
Yeah, it's the fault. Dosha means fault. It can also mean evil, I guess.
Yeah.
Can be evil, but dukkha, and the dukkha is the problem, the fault of dukkha. Dukkha dosha anudarshanam. Seeing the unhappiness of birth, death, disease, and old age. The evil, so the evil is the dukkha. The
fault.
Dukkha.
Yeah.
Dosha, the fault. Or the,
thank you.
Yeah, imperfection or the mistake in it. Dosha means like also imperfection. Yeah.
I remember when I was very young, and I think probably everybody has this experience, you sort of hit the brick wall. At some point, you realize, without any knowledge, wait a minute, I'm going to die. You know? I mean, I'm born, and what is this? Where am you know, what am I supposed to be doing here?
Yeah.
Because there's this cycle going on.
Yeah.
And if you're a little bit perceptive, you can see, the light at the end of the tunnel, and it's not real pretty.
Yeah.
And so that would then create that question in your mind, what am I supposed to be doing here?
Yeah, I think also Prabhupada also mentions the fact that if these questions do not come in your mind, then you're no better than an animal. Because human life means atato brahma jigyasa. The human being has these questions, why am I suffering? Now is the time to ask these questions. Why am I suffering? Where am I going? Who am I? And if you don't, if that doesn't enter your mind, then that means you're just like the animals. It doesn't enter their minds. Why am I suffering? Yeah. Ramiya?
The Western countries, there is this kind of illusion, myth put out. I know my father, when he retired from working, after maybe 5 or 6 years, he said, son, they call these the golden years, but let me tell you, there's nothing golden about them.
Yeah, that reminds me of a story from Bhadri Narayan, who tells the best stories. When his father was having a retirement, he went to his father's retirement ceremony. He was like 70 or 70-something when he retired from his business. And his father made a speech. And he said, actually, my son, my youngest son, Buddy and Ryan, he's the most intelligent. I'm retiring at 77. He retired at 17 and joined the Hare Krishna movement. So, he got some realization there. But yeah, we retired. I've been retired my whole life, and people ask me what you do. I said, I'm retired, even when I was like in my 40s, what to say? No, I can't actually say I'm retired. I'm the right age for it. But anyway, yeah, we retire from materialistic activities. Yeah. Yeah.
Very wonderful.
It's going to be to retire and have so much money. And
billboards on the way down to Tampa, come to your ultimate retiring living community. But it's just a fast slope to intense suffering.
Yeah, yeah. Suffering. Yes, Ringavati.
I was wondering, in all of your teachings, you teach all the Bhagavatam at the VIHE?
We have already taught the whole Bhagavatam. We did. Burijan Prabhu and myself started in 2002. Mm-hmm. In 4 years, we did the Bhakti Vaibhav for 6 cantos. And then the next 5 years, we did the second 6 cantos. That's available. You can download it from VIHE. Mm. Yeah, we did the whole thing, Bhakti Vaibhav and Bhakti Vedanta courses. So that can be downloaded, yeah.
That's beautiful, thank you. I'm so amazed. I've known you for so many years, and I can just before my eyes see you advancing and advancing, and it gives great faith. I appreciate all your teaching and working. I was wondering, when you're teaching, mostly younger people, I think, are coming to the classes?
No, we have all ages.
All ages.
Parvati, from Parvati, I think she's the oldest.
Mm.
Down to younger ones, yeah. But the serious ones are like more in their 30s, like the actual students, the Bhaktivedanta students.
Uh-huh.
And all of our students are already teaching, and they're all over the world teaching and giving seminars already. Yeah. That, because part of the Bhaktivedanta was you have to teach it, teach Bhagavatam. Uh-huh. You have to give seminars. It's part of the criteria for getting the Bhaktivedanta title. We have to teach.
Is your experience with the students, are they actually imbibing the knowledge in
their
heart, and it's not simply theoretical or intellectual?
Yeah. Actually, as a teacher, we also have our exams, like the students, and they're not written. They're life exams. What I understood while I was teaching was that whatever I teach, I go through in my life at the same time. As I told you yesterday, near death, I had near death. Juba had near death, I had near death. So what was it? Devahuti went for a, what do you call it, makeover. She dove into the thing. I was also going for Ayurvedic treatment. It was like very interesting. That, and my students also said the same thing, some of them, that what we are studying, we are experiencing in our lives now. And of course, the best way that it's not theoretical is that you teach it. And so all of them are teaching. All of the students are teaching. And that way you really, as it says in the beginning of Bhagavatam, that Sutta Goswami not only heard it, he also was speaking it, or realization. He was having realization by speaking. So you get realization by speaking, because you prepare, and then you come up, and then there's Super Soul, who gives you, and I speak things that I never heard of before, but then we find them in the commentaries or in the scriptures. It's just like you connect with the Super Soul when you speak. So it's not theoretical, because they have to teach. And there are two. One already took sannyas of our students, and the other one is on the sannyas list. So they're all out preaching. And one is head of Nepal, and there's two ladies went to university. It's like they're... And then one is preaching all over Adipurush. He's a great Sanskrit scholar as well. We never studied, Bharija and I. We didn't know Sanskrit. All the Sanskrit I know is from reading Prabhupada's books from the synonyms. But you learn a lot. Like the word dosha, I was telling so many meanings. That's just from the synonyms. A mistake, this, that. And I didn't study Sanskrit. But it's true. If you would just read the synonyms, you learn. You learn something. You can learn Sanskrit, something, anyway. Somebody once tried to teach me Sanskrit, and I was starting to learn, and they said, oh, I thought you already knew Sanskrit. You already studied. I said, no, I never studied. It's just from Prabhupada's books. Everything's there. Yes.
That reminded me of, there's... a devotee couple from Poland who have a preaching center in Las Vegas. Forgetting his name, but Sura Paul. He started going to the temple in Poland, and he didn't know any English at all, but
right.
Just from reading Srila Prabhupada's books.
Mm-hmm.
He learned English.
Yeah, many. There are many like that. So many. So many. Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.